It's a fascinating time to be a fan of Middle Earth. As we wait in eager anticipation for the new Second Age TV series, the future of storytelling in Middle Earth seems wide open. Yet so much hangs in the balance. Will the show be a rousing success, everything we could want, or will it be a total flop? If it is successful, what does that mean for spinoffs and even future stories? Join us as we explore the future of Middle Earth. The Tolkien Road, Episode 195, The Future of Middle Earth, 2020 Edition. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Episode 195 of The Tolkien Road, The Future of Middle Earth, 2020 Edition. Greta.
Hey.
How are you? I was going to say, how are you? And then I was like, I'll throw a little thing in there and say, how is ya?
How is ya?
Came up, how are ya?
How are ya? You combine the R and the is.
That's right.
How are ya? Great. I'm actually really great. Yeah.
Good.
How about you?
Doing well.
Fantastic.
Awesome.
Yes.
Cool. Well, now that that's established.
Yeah.
Here we are on another episode. And this one is, I think, going to be a really fun one because we're talking about the future of Middle Earth, and it's a very hopeful future, in my view. It is a very exciting kind of, you know, like the future is wide open, as mm-hmm. the great Tom Petty once
mm-hmm.
said, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is gonna be a really great episode.
It's appropriate that we're doing it in May too.
Yeah.
I think. I feel like May, you know, with all the graduations and mm-hmm. things like that, it's flowers blooming. It's just an appropriate time for new stuff and new beginnings and futures, new futures.
Can I get an amen?
Amen.
Amen. Well, I was also just going to say...
I thought you were giving me a high five.
No, that was more Sorry. Like, you know, just like raising the hand.
Okay.
Right? Well, so, sorry to leave you hanging.
That's okay.
So
I'll get over it.
But it's also a very optimistic time just because, you know, things seem to be maybe starting to open back up from the coronavirus
mm-hmm.
shutdown,
mm-hmm.
and that's exciting.
Very
that's
exciting.
Encouraging.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, but this is going to be all about the future and the exciting things that may or may not be in store for Tolkiendom. Before we dive in, we wanted to start by giving a shout out to our newest patron, Robert B.
Robert,
thank you so
thank
much
you.
For your patronage. If you, dear listener, are not a patron and would like to become one, don't forget to head on over to patreon.com/Tolkien Road and pledge $1 or more per episode. You can head on over there and find out all the deets. Find out all the deets.
Deets.
Yeah,
do it.
You can also rate us on iTunes. In fact, we'd really appreciate it if you would. Please leave us a 5-star rating and say some nice things about us. Thanks to all those who have been doing that. We've been getting a lot of comments and a lot of ratings lately. So
that's great.
It's always great to hear from
yeah.
folks, especially the positive comments and
yeah.
the 5-star ratings.
Right.
So, and then we'd love to hear from you in any fashion. So we'll be reading some correspondence later, and that's what we've been doing lately is we will read some correspondence at the end of each episode. And so for your chance to be heard live, we'd love to hear from you if you'd send it to TolkienRoadPodcast@gmail.com or go to TolkienRoad.com and you can leave a comment on a post or you can go through the contact form, Facebook, Twitter, all that kind of stuff. We'll respond. We always do our best to respond to people, even if it takes a little while. For some of you, you know, you send stuff and I mean to respond. I appreciate every piece of correspondence we get, and so I hope to respond to, you know, if I haven't responded to something you've written yet, then I plan to at some point. So at least know that the intention is there. All right.
Well, you know, it's true that it's at least much better now that you've taken that over.
Yeah.
When I was in charge, it was not good.
Yeah.
I'm just not an emailer.
I wasn't going to say anything, but...
Well, it's okay.
Yeah.
If you had, I could
at
have
least
taken
you, at
it.
Least
it's
you have
true.
Self-awareness.
I owned up. I ponied up. And John, I think you're doing a great job with
well,
the correspondence.
Thank you.
So keep it up.
Great.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Welcome.
All right. Well, you know what? Speaking of correspondence, we have a SpeakPipe. And the rule with SpeakPipe is that if you go to our website and you click on SpeakPipe and you leave us a voicemail over there, then you get to jump to the front of the line and get to be heard at the beginning of the next episode. So today's speak pipe is from Eric. Eric, all right, here we go.
Hey, John. Eric here. Just heard your podcast on The Hobbit Revisited. And I thought it was curious that the Old Forest, the Barrow Downs, and Tom didn't get any kind of a mention. At least, I didn't hear you talk about it. What do you think?
Great question. So this actually did cross my mind as well when we were doing the last the last series on the lost chapters of The Hobbit, the 1960 revision, unpublished revision. Yeah, it's a little disappointing that we didn't get anything about the Old Forest or Tom or the Barrow Downs or anything like that, especially since they traveled right by there, would have traveled right by there on the journey of the Hobbit as we understand it. So Eric, we definitely didn't leave anything out. I guarantee you, if there had been something about Tom Bombadil in there, we would have probably done a whole episode just on the thing about Tom Bombadil.
Total Tom groupies. So yeah, that would have made it in for sure.
Yeah, kind of a bummer, And to me, like, that would have been a, one of the themes we had with that series was that there it was this effort to kind of like make it a little more mature, the tone a little more mature, mm-hmm, right? The names of the chapters were a good example. The changes to the names of the chapters were a good example of that.
Yeah.
And so it took away some of the whimsy, right? Some of the whimsical nature of the other one. And I think having more about the Old Forest or Tom Bombadil in there would have been great. But I guess the primary reason that we don't hear anything about it is because they just didn't go through the Old Forest. And Tom sticks to the boundaries of the Old Forest, right?
So in the revision, they did not go through the Old Forest.
No, they don't go through the Old Forest. Remember, okay, that's the whole reason in the Fellowship that they wind up meeting Tom is because they have to go through the Old Forest because they're trying to avoid the main road.
Oh, right.
So, and the Old Forest is this, like, scary,
so
magical
place. So he just
place.
Totally took that out. I'm trying to remember.
No. He doesn't take it out. No, it's never in The Hobbit. It's not in The Hobbit at all.
Oh, it's not
it's
in
The Fellowship.
Hobbit at all.
It's in Fellowship. Yeah.
Okay. But we were talking about The Hobbit.
Right. I'm just saying, like, I'm just saying.
Oh, you're sad that it wasn't added in the revision.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
And that's what Eric is saying, right? That,
yeah.
You know, it's kind of surprising we don't hear anything about, since they travel right by, they travel just north, because the Old Forest is on the south side of the east-west road that goes from the Shire to Rivendell.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of surprising we don't hear anything about the Old Forest or Tom or the Barrow Downs or anything like that. So, I guess, and really the reason for that is they just steered clear of the Old Forest. I think that's what most hobbits tended to do.
I see.
It is a disappointment, and that's all I can really say about it, Eric. I mean, I would have loved for Tolkien. I mean, wouldn't that have been cool to like have another secret thing of Tom Bombadil, another adventure with Tom Bombadil?
Well, it is kind of surprising that he didn't.
Yeah.
Like, just because his whole point in rewriting or revising The Hobbit was to tie it more into the world of the Lord of the Rings, right? So it seems like that would have been a great opportunity to add just one more connection. But
I agree. It's almost
curious.
Like it's almost like it was with the revision. There was something just a little too sober about it all. Like it was.
Maybe he was trying too hard.
Even like
thinking it.
Even the Broken Bridge episode. Like, it was cool to have like the horse, Gandalf's horse, Roald, that he could speak to and was kind of like a step above the rest of the horses. He was mm-hmm. he was a Rivendell horse, mm-hmm. not just your average pony, right?
Right.
And so it was cool to have that aspect of it, but as far as like the big new episode of it all was just this bridge is broken and they have to figure out a way across the river. I mean, no like really like new exciting things other than just trying to cross, which is a pretty
right.
In the grand scheme of things you do on an adventure, that's a pretty mundane thing.
To cross a roaring stream.
Well, a bridge is broken, got to cross the stream.
Yeah, so, that's a little cliche.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? Maybe he was just trying to start to flesh it out more, and if he had kept with it, he would have gone back and added in other things. And but you know, this actually seeks kind of well. Great. So Eric, thank you so much. Thanks for the question. This actually seeks really well into our topic for today. So the future of Middle Earth and of future Middle Earth storytelling. All right. So
send us more voicemails, people.
Yes, we'll send us more
Please.
Voicemails.
We love
All right.
them.
So let's dive right into today's topic.
Okay.
Okay, so here we are. It's 2020, and I don't know if you remember, Greta, but a few years ago, we did a series of episodes on like the future of Middle Earth, and I literally remember that we were like, I think it was a Saturday morning, and we were getting ready to record an episode, and I just Googled something about Lord of the Rings, and the news of Amazon's acquisition came up, right, it was like. What? Like, it was this thing that, like, everybody thought would never happen had happened, right? Somebody had somehow acquired the rights to tell more stories in Middle Earth. And, it, you know, we still, even you know, several years later now, at least a year and a half, I can't remember the exact timeline, but a year and a half later, we still don't know too much about what this show is going to be about, except that it's going to be about Numenor and the Second Age. And we know a bunch of the people who are working on it. But, you know, I think that the tone of Tolkien fandom has just changed so much in that time. There's this sense of, like, real anticipation that, you know, I wasn't around to experience as a Tolkien fan when the Lord of the Rings films came out. I wasn't yet enough of a Tolkien fan to, like, really... I mean, I was excited about the Hobbit movies when they came out. I didn't have a podcast or anything at that time. But to me, I can't think of a time that would be more exciting to be a Tolkien fan since, like, The Silmarillion came out. You know, like, it's just, the future truly seems wide open as far as the stories of Middle Earth. So that's what we're going to talk about today. Now, I will say something. I mean, so some people will point out, and I think some of the Tolkien purists out there will point out, well, you know, there's been tons of books that have come out, right, since The Silmarillion, right? There's been Unfinished Tales. There's been 12 volumes of history. It's just packed with all kinds of interesting stuff. And there's The Children of Húrin. There's the Beren and Lúthien book. There's the Fall of Gondolin book. And all you can point to other things that have, you know, come to light since then. But I would classify all of those. I those things are all wonderful, and I don't deny that. And I 100% will be the first one to stand up and rigidly salute Christopher Tolkien for all of the work he did over the years after his father passed away to get that stuff into the light. However, there's a huge problem with those works, and that's that they're academic, like they're histories, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's not easy reading.
They're literary histories, especially when you get into, I mean, The Silmarillion is hard enough for people,
yeah,
and it doesn't have any of the like footnotes or anything like that. Right. It literally doesn't have any of the asides by the writer where you're like, who's talking? Right? Is this part of the story or who's talking? Right? You get into Unfinished Tales and you have to spend some time like, okay, orienting yourself and saying, okay, who's talking here? Oh, wait, that's Christopher. That's actually something that Tolkien himself wrote. Oh, and it continues like that throughout the histories, right? And then you have, you know, this question of like if there's different versions of the same stories that we have. And again, all this stuff is really interesting and fascinating, but you definitely have to be more on the academic side, you know, or maybe that's the wrong term, but you have to really be into Tolkien to want to get into that stuff.
Right.
Right.
Yes. You have to be, it's a commitment.
You have to be, you have to be a dwarf. Right?
Dwarf.
Like, you have to be just a miner all the way, because to find the nuggets, you got to do some serious mining.
I like that analogy. Right? That's a good one. Yeah.
So, that is, you know, that's kind of the thing that I think, I've definitely felt that. I will confess that I've definitely felt that over the years as a Tolkien fan. It's like, okay, you know, these histories, and I can remember, like, reading Lord of the Rings, and, you know, and finally getting through I can remember reading Lord of the Rings, loving it, and then being like, oh man, there's like 12 volumes of this thing called it. Go to the bookstore back in the day, and there's like 12 volumes of this history of Middle Earth, but that's amazing. And then you realize that it's not what you think it is.
Right.
It's not like just these all different stories that, you know, are like cool little stories from the history of Middle Earth or anything like that. It's literally like the history of the writing of Middle Earth.
So
that's always been something in my mind that's been kind of like, you know, I'm glad we have these. I definitely am. I'm very thankful we have these. But, oh, man, I would just love another, like, Bilbo adventure story. You know, one of the adventures that we know he went on between the end of The Hobbit and the beginning of The Lord of the Rings.
Because we know he went on lots.
You know, they probably weren't as big a deal as the quest of Erebor. Right. But, like, but we know that. We know that he did some cool stuff in the meantime.
Right. Yeah.
We know he probably got together with some of the dwarves again and went on some little adventures to go treasure hunting or something. And they probably got into some, like, fun trouble. Right.
Yeah.
And that's just, I mean, that's just one little thing of this vast universe of Middle Earth that you could point to. So that was where we were until the announcement of the Latron Prime news. But then with that Latron Prime news, suddenly everything changed. Right. Suddenly everything has become new and possible in the world of Tolkien. So I think that here's how I'm viewing Latron Prime. I think it's the most expensive trial run of all time. I mean, they paid like $250 million for this thing. I mean, just some serious, you know, FU money, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it just crazy.
Why are you calling it a trial run? Just because it's never been done before? Like, they've made movies and they've, you know, done different little animated things, but they've never done a mini series. Is that why you're calling it a trial run?
Yeah, that's what I'd say.
Okay.
So, what I mean by the most expensive trial run of all time is that it's clear when you kind of look into the language of the announcement that came out when they made this deal. That there was some kind of thing that it's implied that if this goes well, right, if the Tolkien estate is happy with how this turns out, then there's the possibility of doing more in the future.
I see what you're saying.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
So
that makes sense.
So this is a trial run in the sense that, like, if the Tolkien estate is happy with how this turns out, we're going to get more. And I think what that means is that we'll eventually get to see the Silmarillion. I think Amazon probably wanted to do the Silmarillion, and the Tolkien estate was like, I don't know if we're ready to go with anybody for the Silmarillion, because they don't want to see the Silmarillion done wrong. So maybe it was like, well, let's do something else first and establish the process, and then if you do that right, then we can talk about the Silmarillion. Right.
Yeah.
Which
I think that's fair.
I'm okay with.
Yeah.
I don't want to see them screw up the Silmarillion.
Mm-mm.
Right.
Mm-mm.
There's too many great stories in the Silmarillion. So.
Okay. Yeah, I agree.
So anyway, hugely expensive trial run, and I think there's a, and I don't have, don't get me wrong, I don't have a basis. I don't have any kind of inside scoop for, like, most of this stuff. It's more of just speculating, because speculating is fun.
Yeah.
But also a gut instinct. That maybe it's not just a Silmarillion series we're talking about. Because if we think about it, they're literally creating stories from scratch, right?
In this trial run.
Not completely from scratch, but they're creating stories from scratch within a set of boundaries, mm-hmm. right? Within a set of guidelines.
Right.
And those guidelines are the established lore of the Second Age,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
So there's this sense of, like, okay, you can tell whatever story you want to tell, but it has to be about this, Numenor,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And you have to respect the established lore, okay? So I think that indicates to me that if this thing is a huge success on both a creative and a financial level, then why wouldn't we get more beyond just a Silmarillion series after that,
yeah,
right?
Right. Yeah,
why wouldn't we
profitable.
Get more stories?
Yeah.
Like actual books.
Like new stories.
New stories.
Yeah.
Right? So, and I just think about this and I'm like, this could be so cool, right? Now, I think there's a lot of, there's a spidey sense that goes off for Tolkien fans and even for fans of other, you know, other fictional universes, okay? So, there's been a lot of cases of things going well in fictional universe storytelling, and a lot of examples of things going not so well. I would point to Star Wars as an example of things not going particularly well. Now, there are exceptions to that. I think there have been some successes on smaller screen storytelling, but I am not a fan of the new sequel trilogy in Star Wars. I think that they got that all wrong.
I can't even weigh in.
You can't even weigh in. Because I took the kids to see it. You didn't go to, because you're just not a big Star Wars fan, but I took the kids. You saw the episode 7. But
the one with Rey.
Yeah. Well, yeah. She's in all three of them, but like with 8 and 9, like I've only seen each of them once in the theater because I couldn't handle it, you know? I was just like, I just can't bother with these anymore.
I thought the last one was okay.
It was okay, but like it's Star Wars.
Better
I don't want to be okay,
one.
Right?
Yeah, I hear you.
If the Lord of the Ring, if this second age show is okay, then it's going to be crap.
Like, what do you have to, like, what's the reason for that? What do you blame for the downfall of the Star Wars franchise? Is it because they sold it to Disney?
It's really interesting. I don't get into any of that. I think that honestly, they didn't have a good plan for the story, like the overarching story.
Okay.
They were just like, well, we can do whatever we want. And, you know, they just kind of it just felt undisciplined.
They did not work within the established lore.
I would say that's true.
Okay.
I'm asking. Now, and I think part of that is you had, anyway, I don't want to, I'm not trying to get into anything about Star Wars. I was more using that as an example. I think, but I do think there's lessons to be learned, right, from what I view as the bungling of a lot of potential with Star Wars storytelling. I think there's still bright pastures ahead and bright days ahead. I think I enjoyed The Mandalorian. I didn't think it was like fantastic, but I thought it was pretty good, and I thought it boded well for the future. And in particular, I think actually the future, in a lot of cases, with classic franchise, like cinematic franchises like this, I think is increasingly on the small screen. I think it's increasingly like episodic storytelling rather than like big event movies, you know?
Yeah.
I think the stories of Numenor are going to like translate particularly well to that format as well. So, I think that the thing that any fan of Tolkien would fear is that if we're talking about future stories, not just like on the screen, but like actual books, is that we're going to get these, like, you know, some guy is going to stand up and be like, I'll write the next Tolkien book. And in my mind, it's like the first person, anybody who stands up and says, I'll write the next book in Middle Earth, like, hell no, it's not you. Like, if you think you can do that, you are not the right person to do that. That is just
fair.
Complete, yeah. like you just fired yourself by saying that before you were even hired, right? So how would this work? Well, I think it needs to work by a storytelling team, honestly. And I think it needs to be not necessarily a bunch of ghostwriters, but a team of people who are utter nerds about Tolkien lore, and no one gets all the credit and no one takes all of the blame, right? When things don't go well.
Yeah.
Right. And I think you need to start with some stories that maybe aren't as big a deal, like some lesser adventures of Bilbo, right?
Start small. Yeah.
I think you need to start with some, like, you know, telling some stories about just some interesting characters who we don't really know much about, that, you know, where there's not a lot of risk of doing it wrong.
Right.
And let yourself kind of gracefully grow into it. Right.
Yeah.
Let the process grow into it.
Absolutely.
But that would be my big thing, is that there needs to be, like, there will never be another J.R.R. Tolkien. He had a unique genius and he gave us this incredible thing in Middle Earth. And to put that burden of trying to replicate the magic that he gave us on somebody else.
On just one person. Yeah. It's too much.
It is. It's too much. Yeah. And so that would be my desire, is to see, like, I would love to see more stories. I just don't want to see one person being like, well, I could write another Tolkien story. Like, No, you can't.
Yeah, you know, I really love the idea of all this. I really do. Mm-hmm. But part of me is tempted to just be like, okay, let's just leave well enough alone. Like, you know, I mean, it would, to me, it's better to just have what Tolkien wrote than to have someone trying to write, or a group of people trying to write like he did, and have it be completely disappointing. You know what I mean? I mean, I'm not saying that I would not like this. I think part of me would, but there is a part of me that's scared. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I feel like it could possibly ruin Tolkien for me. Do you know what I'm saying? I'm probably being a little overly dramatic, but I don't know. I just think about the books that I love, like, so much. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, I think about people trying, you know, to, like, you know, okay, here's an example. Jane Eyre, my favorite book of all time.
Sure.
I read a spinoff. It was a rewriting of it. Mm-hmm. And like a modern adaptation, if you will. Mm-hmm. And shame on me. Like, I probably should have known better. Like, but someone I respected recommended the book. It was, you know, it was fine. For what it was fine. Mm-hmm. But it still left like a little bit of a bad taste in my mouth. Mm-hmm. Like, how dare this person take this amazing work of Jane Eyre and put their own spin on it? Like, who do they think they are? You know? So, I don't know. I don't want that to happen to the Tolkien books for me. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I hear you. I'm just not as, like, scared of that risk. I mean, I think that, I think it's all about how you market it and approach it and package it, right? Okay. If you try to package it as like, here's the long-awaited sequel. Like, first of all, let me say this. I am totally against anything coming after The Lord of the Rings. To me, the history of Middle-earth ends with the end of Lord of the Rings.
I think that's good.
Right?
Yeah,
Or, you know,
agree.
The end of the... Like, everything... We are not allowed to go beyond that horizon.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay.
Like, to me, Tolkien established that because his whole thing was like the fourth age. There's no good stories to tell in the fourth age is basically what he said, right? And I would not want stories beyond the fourth age.
Yeah.
But I think within the boundaries of, you know, Ina Lindale to the end of Lord of the Rings, you know, I think there's so many things, like you look at the map of Middle Earth. And there's so many regions that we know nothing about, but your mind wants to know, like, what was going on there, right? What, you know, what was happening here? You look at the timelines, right? 6,000 years of history between the Second Age and the Third Age, and there's all these names that are dropped in the appendices that we know nothing about.
Mm-hmm.
Whole lifetimes, right?
Yeah.
That were apparently significant enough for Tolkien to name drop,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
You could go so many different directions. You have so many different possibilities and all these things. And so as far as you're concerned about like having somebody come along and ruin Tolkien for us, I just don't think that can happen. I think you just have to, whatever it is, you have to establish that, look, Tolkien did what Tolkien did,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Here is like we're never
keep them separate.
We're not going to put his name on stuff,
yeah,
right? That he didn't create.
Fair enough. Yeah,
we'll put like the Tolkien estate or something like that, but we're not going to put like J.R.R. Tolkien's name on something he didn't create,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and maybe we call it like, you know, Legends of Middle Earth or something like that, right?
Yeah,
But there's a clear delineation for me, like, and there always will be with any of these stories, that Tolkien gave us this, right? He gave us these stories. He gave us these facts. And here we are as fans. You know, we have the ability to work with it. I mean, look, at some point, whether we do it or not, whether it's done in a, like, you know, rightful way or not, it's going to be done. It's already done in fan fiction, and it's going to be done at some point in the future because people love these stories and want to know more about these, you know, these periods of time. Mm-hmm. So, okay.
Yeah.
So I'd rather have it done in a way that's like done well and
well, sure.
and done in the right kind of way.
Yeah.
And I guess, As far as the thing with like Jane Eyre goes, like, did it really ruin Jane Eyre? Like, can you not read Jane Eyre?
I think that's maybe putting it too strongly. It's not like it ruined it for me, but it, you know, it's just when you have something that you hold so dear and then you see someone else come along and, you know, try to kind of do their own thing with it. It's just like why? Who do you think you are? So no, I wouldn't say, again, I think I maybe overspoke, but it didn't ruin it for me, but it, I guess it just kind of made me mad a little bit.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I can hear that. I mean, let's go back to Star Wars. I mean, I loved, the original Star Wars trilogy, before I even knew who J.R.R. Tolkien was. Right. Mm-hmm. And as far as like storytelling, that kind of storytelling goes, epic storytelling, it was my first love, and me and millions of others.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, I thought the prequel trilogy was a disaster. And I don't think the sequel trilogy is, I'm not sure which is more of a disaster, you know, really. Mm. But that doesn't ruin the original movies for me. Right. Like it doesn't. I'm like,
yeah,
it's not how I would have done it. Like, and I can be, you know, I can tell you why I don't like the prequel trilogy or the sequel trilogy, but you know what? I did really like The Mandalorian, the TV show. You know, I didn't think it was like perfect. I didn't think it was like the greatest thing of all time, but I enjoyed it. And I also enjoyed, a lot of the Clone Wars, the animated series that takes place before the, you know, in the prequel trilogy era. I enjoyed Star Wars Rebels. I've enjoyed a lot of the books I've read, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not all of them, but I've enjoyed, you know, quite a few of the books I've read from this era, or from these, you know, just taking place in different times, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Heir to the Empire series by Timothy Zahn was kind of the unofficial sequel trilogy years ago that came out back in the 90s, and I really enjoyed those books. Again, I didn't think they were perfect, not how I would have done it, but I enjoyed those. So it's the fun of this is that it's hit or miss, right? It's like you've got the original trilogy and nothing will ever take that down or, you know, diminish my love for that and the impact that had on so many people, right? And its originality and all these things. In the same way that nothing can ever diminish the originality of, you know, of the, of Lord of the Rings, of The Hobbit, of the Silmarillion and all of the lore that he gave us.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But I would love to have other stories taking place in that universe. And I think the conversation that needs to be had is what are the guardrails for storytelling?
Yeah, that's important.
Like,
for sure.
So that you don't, because I think what happened with the sequel trilogy in Star Wars is that it went, there weren't enough guardrails. There weren't enough, and there wasn't a clear vision of where this story needs to go. That's always the peril of telling of writing a sequel to something,
mm-hmm.
right?
Absolutely, yeah.
That's a huge challenge in writing any sequel.
Mm-hmm.
Is
mm-hmm.
where does this story need to go? And I just don't think they did a good job of. I think they were just kind of like making it up by the seat of their pants, and they didn't have a great story for all. Overarching story for all three. You know,
right. Yeah, I guess what I really just don't want is like a cheap, cheesy imitation.
No, you know? Not at all.
I think that's my biggest fear, you know, just because Tolkien set the bar so high.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no way that you can get that same, you know, there's no way that they'll measure up in a lot of ways. So, I mean, I guess as long as your expectations are, you know, in line, that mm-hmm. you're not hoping for too much from these, it would be fine. It would be fine.
I think that's wisdom for every Tolkien fan, right? Like in the future, as far as any of this stuff goes, is to be cautiously optimistic, right? Like it's always exciting when something you love has a wide open future, right?
Yeah, it's wonderful, but also it's a little scary.
But that's why I'm saying measured optimism, right?
Yeah.
Like if you tempered optimism, right? If you don't let yourself be like, oh, this Tron Prime is going to be the greatest show of all time. Well,
right.
Let's just wait until it happens, and then we'll make and we'll make a decision on that.
Yeah.
But if it is, that'd be awesome. I'd love it. Like, but there's much less chance I'll feel that way about it if I go in being like, oh, this is the greatest thing that's ever happened. Mm-hmm. I can't believe I learned too much from the sensation of the of living through the prequel and sequel trilogies of Star Wars, right? That, you know, it's less like, oh, there's just, it's too easy to screw things up. But I feel like also, I feel like there's been a lot of, in general, like the storytelling community has hopefully learned a lot through the process mm-hmm. of mm-hmm. how to do it right and how to do it wrong,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure there will be good things and bad things about it, and things we love, things we hate. And as fans, that's, you know, that's part of the fun of it. But in my mind, Tolkien's own work will always be its own thing, right? And it has an impenetrable translucent steel bubble around it, right?
Okay.
Yeah. And anything that grows beyond it, like, is wonderful and fun. Mm-hmm. And it's like, if it's great, it's
great.
You can
take it or leave it.
If it's not, yeah. then, you know, I'm not gonna lose any sleep, except for when, you know, people, this is what's really frustrating when you're like a Tolkien purist or a purist of anything, is when people start, you know, mistaking the, you know, like, as much as I love Jackson's movies, it's annoying, like, when you see all of the, you know, like fan art or people just how Jackson depicted things becomes the gold standard for how they really looked, right?
Yeah.
And without being like, well, but that's just his take on it, right?
One person's interpretation.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think you have to have that kind of operative principle, even if you're the creator, that, like, mm-hmm. you know, this is my take on it. I want to throw mm-hmm. this in there. So we've talked about books, but I think I've mentioned before, I'd love to see like more like graphic novel, like animated storytelling of these sorts of things.
Yeah.
Because I feel like that we know Tolkien had his own illustrations that he created for a lot of his works. And so I feel like there's like a sympathy, like, with that medium, with Tolkien's own interests. And I would love to see Lord of the Rings in both a graphic novel and an animated series form. For all the things we complain about that Jackson tweaked about the Lord of the Rings in the films,
mm-hmm.
I think you could do a 10 episode animated, like, series. And I'm not talking like cartoon, like cartoonish, like kid cartoon. I'm talking like really cool animation, like
Spider-Verse.
Spider-Verse may not be the right feel, but like really cool animation, like,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
You're right. So I'm just not enough of, like, I'm not an animator, at all. I have no visual art talent at all.
Either.
So I can't speak to like the different styles and that sort of thing, but I know what I like when I see it. And I think it would be great to see like a 100% faithful adaptation of Lord of the Rings in an animated form. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that might be the only medium in which you could bring that to screen. Right. So, you know, that's an example of like, okay, Jackson has his take and now here's this take on it. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah.
You know, that's what, true. That's what these stories eventually, that's what happens over, you know, after time. But, you know, you think about how many different takes on Shakespeare's stories are there?
Oh man.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a whole like industry of just like, we're gonna do this like steampunk version of Hamlet, right? You know, these kinds of things. And now I'm not advocating for a steampunk version of anything from Middle Earth, but it's Middle Earth stories are different from Shakespearean plays. But my point is that I think there's room for more than one version of a lot of these things too.
Mm-hmm.
Right. For more than one artist. And I think that's a good thing. I really do. Like, so I'm optimistic. I'm like, anything, like, if it gives us the opportunity to talk about it and be like, what are the virtues of this? What are the, you know, what are the downfalls of this? That's exciting to me as a Tolkien fan.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
I can get on board too.
Well, Greta,
sir,
what are some things that you would like to see on screen and in written form? From Middle Earth.
From Middle Earth.
Don't say Lord of the Rings, Harry Potter crossover.
Oh, you read my mind.
No hobbits at Hogwarts.
Really? That'd be so cool.
No.
I would love to see Beren and Lúthien. Like, love. Mm-hmm. To see that done, either as a, I think a mini series, I think a movie would just be, I think they'd have to take out too much to make that a movie.
Yeah,
but I think that would make an awesome mini series. And written, I'm totally on board with the graphic novel.
Mm-hmm.
I think a graphic novel of the Silmarillion would also be super awesome. Like, I know, didn't we have that something Palmer?
Right. Evan Palmer, yeah, like one of the
Didn't
earliest episodes we did.
One?
Yeah.
He started one. He did it
of Ina Lindley.
Ina Lindley. But I think especially with as difficult a read as the Silmarillion is, I think a graphic novel would be super helpful because it would, you know, to maybe read the Silmarillion but then have the graphic novel there to kind of help guide you, I think would be great. I know when I was reading The Odyssey, I use the graphic novel in addition to the written work, and I just found it very, very helpful.
Yeah.
So those are a couple of things that just kind of pop right into my head. What about you? I would love to see The Mariner's Wife done too. I think that would be really cool.
Yeah, that would be that's almost like the one that they show on PBS. Like,
oh,
it's like right after Downton Abbey, The Mariner's Wife comes on.
Mariner's Wife. I mean, it might be a little on the slow side, a little on the dark side, but I think it would be cool.
I mean, I'm a fan of Downton Abbey, but yeah, to me, it's like, you know, that's the one that, like, now it's like time for, you know, the Jane Austen hour, and then and it's like The Mariner's Wife is next. But I would love. I mean, I've already mentioned, like, more, like, I think it'd be fun to, like, have Bilbo's adventures, right? Maybe, you know, just, like, a book of just, like, short stories of Bilbo's adventures or something like that.
That would be fun. That would be really fun.
There's all these, like, places on the maps that we don't know anything about. I mean, I think it'd be cool to see a series, you know, developed by... I think you'd have to go back in time in the Third Age, but, like, you know, like, what goes on at the Sea of Rune, right? Or, you know, maybe it'd be cool to, like, have a, you know, series of stories about other wizards, like Radagast, right?
Oh, that would be cool. More stories about Radagast. That would be cool. Yeah.
I mean, we hear all this stuff about Gil-galad, and I think we're going to get a good bit about him in the Latron Prime show, but, you know, he was apparently a pretty cool guy, so, it, you know, it'd be great to get more stories about him. Legends of Moria. Right? Just more stories about the Mines of Moria. Stories about Ents.
The Ent Wives.
Yeah.
The story of the Ents and the Ent Wives.
I mean, you know, there's just so many possibilities.
Yeah.
So many possibilities. So I'm just like, why not? Let's get on it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. That's where I'm landing. But I hope this show goes well. I hope Latron Prime goes well. And I hope that we get a Silmarillion series on the tail of it that we're all excited about because the Numenor show went well. So
sky's the limit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The future is wide open.
I knew that was coming.
Yeah, you knew it.
I knew it.
All right. So any other thoughts on this, Greta?
I think that's good.
All right. Well, we want to hear from you guys. What do you think about any of these topics?
Yeah.
Am I way off base in my position of being cautiously optimistic? Or are you, like, incredibly optimistic? Or are you like, it's a horrible idea. They shouldn't be doing any stories in Tolkien's world. This is just all off base. I'd love to hear from you guys and hear your opinions. So... and then what stories, if you are of the opinion that you like to see more stories told, like, what stories would you want to see told, right? What are those things that you'd love to see? All right. Time for some correspondence.
Yay. Let's do it.
All right. So we got a few things we'll be getting to today. First, I'm going to look at a couple of recent iTunes reviews. So both of these are, they're positive reviews, I think. And, but I wasn't really entirely sure what to make of them. One says deep, interesting, and entertaining, a world which needs an explaining exploration, which I didn't understand that at first. And then I was like, I kind of like an explaining exploration because that's what we do. We do an explaining exploration.
Yeah, I guess that is what we do.
Right on.
Yeah.
So that's I am the flag warden. Okay, so needs an explaining exploration. So
deep, interesting, and entertaining.
But they find us deep, interesting, and entertaining. That's the
important
thing.
I'll take it. Yeah. I will take it.
I'll take it.
Yeah.
And then love this. I've read The Silmarillion twice and listened to the Adipose book twice, my fave book of all time. I'm not sure what Adipose means.
I don't either.
That's the problem. So
did you Google it?
Let's just Google it right now.
I'm wondering if it's like an autocorrect thing.
Yeah, maybe. Used for the storage of fat. Okay.
Oh, adipose tissue. I didn't even put that together. Of course. I was trying to think of it in relation to
yeah, I wonder
to
if that,
books.
I wonder if that was an autocorrect mistake there. So, but thank you for your comment. I'm glad you love the podcast.
Yes. I'm glad too.
All right. Next up is a note from Patty C. Patty C. He says, hi, John and Greta. I have a lot of catching up to do with the podcast, but my plan is to listen to episodes that are based on whatever chapters I have finished in the books. I recently finished reading The Three Great Tales and have started a reread of The Silmarillion. I look forward to hearing your views and gaining a better understanding of Professor Tolkien's works. Hope you're both well during the coronavirus crisis. All best wishes, Patty.
Well,
thank you.
How nice. Thanks, Patty.
You're doing it the right way, my friend. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for your note. What you are saying is exactly why we do this podcast. So,
yep. Word.
Right on.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And then the final thing is a note, is a comment left on the blog by... Yep. Wrong one. Make sure I find the right one here. Here we go. It's a comment from Jennifer, and Jennifer says, and this is in response to the first part of The Hobbit, The Lost Chapters, episode 182. Jennifer says, when Tolkien mentioned that many people commented that The Lord of the Rings is too short, I have always thought that he was referring to the parts that he removed to the appendices. But he also had in mind the unfinished epilogue. On the other hand, he abandoned the epilogue because he knew that he could answer all those questions directly in letters. Ironically, the narrative style and language of The Hobbit would probably have been more like that of The Lord of the Rings, but how would an epilogue have improved the former without ruining the ending? Maybe Tolkien abandoned rewriting The Hobbit because he realized that most people liked it the way it is. You may not like the narrative style at times, but other times to change it would spoil the whole thing. The Hobbit doesn't need rewriting, just as The Lord of the Rings doesn't need an epilogue. Even The Phantom of the Opera has an epilogue, even though Gaston Leroux admitted that knowing Eric's full story does not excuse the things he did. Pretty good points, I'd say.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I totally agree.
I think you landed about where we did, Jennifer. You know, it was fun to explore this possibility, but you know, I think in the end, it's like it was maybe an overreach, you know, to try and go back and make these corrections to something that by that time was really already a classic,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
At some point, you just can't correct the classics.
No.
They're
just too well loved, and
I think it was a better thing to just go back with like unfinished tales, you know, and write out like kind of more, like tell more of the story and fill it in different places. And then he could go back and answer those questions. But, you know, I think if we were sitting here, I think we may have wound up in a scenario again, to go back to Star Wars, poor George Lucas. You know, George Lucas has insisted that, you know, that the, on revising his movies over and over again, the original trilogy over and over again over the years. And, you know, I like some of the things he did, but some of them are really weird and out of place. And at some point, and a lot of fans are just like, could we just have the original trilogy like as it originally was? Like, and I literally have, I have the VHS copies of the original of before he made any of the changes to it. And I like burned those digitally a couple of years ago just so I would make sure I had them. Right, because there was just so many things that I was like, why did you change? That was one of my favorite things. Why did you change that? So Yeah, I think at the end of the day, once you've got a classic, it's best not to mess with it too much,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah, for perfectionists, like I'm sure Tolkien was, it's hard.
It is.
It's hard to do, but you just got to listen to your fans.
Well, you know, and it's one of those, it's the tough thing about being a creator too, because at the end of the day, like as much like you own what you've done, but at some point it starts becoming more and more of the, belongs to the fans, right? Mm-hmm. Like at some mm-hmm. point there starts to be this exchange that happens from it being your thing purely to being also a thing that the fans own. And it's not the same kind of ownership. Some people will like won't like me saying it that way, but like I don't think there's any getting around that it's true, because without fans, no one knows who you are, right? Without the people who love your work, no one really mm-hmm. knows who you are.
I think that's a good point. I don't know that own is the right word, but they're deeply invested.
There's some kind of investment, yeah. But investment is another word for ownership, right?
Yeah, I guess you're right.
It's not the same. It's not full ownership. It's not 100% ownership, but it's right. There's a sense in which the fan community that surrounds what you do becomes
attached, you know, like they become
attached,
part of it,
and they also yeah. are responsible in part for the success of mm-hmm. what you've done too.
That's true,
right?
Yeah, that's true.
So, anyway, great thoughts, Jennifer. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank
okay.
you a lot.
All right. Well, like you know, you can send correspondence to us at TolkienRoadPodcast@gmail.com. Go to TolkienRoad.com, leave comments, use the contact form, or send us Facebook and Twitter. Any of those ways works. All right.
Yeah.
Good episode, Greta.
Good one, yeah. I agree, John.
All right.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
Thanks for not firing
maybe
me.
Maybe after
yet.
195 episodes, I'll probably make you not a special guest anymore. Maybe you'll actually be a full-time.
I've actually earned my position.
Did you guys know that Greta's been a special guest this whole time?
Surprise.
Right. All right. Well, thanks to all of our listeners, and especially to our patrons. And we will now give a shout out to our $5 or more patrons: Eric B,
Daniel P,
David B,
Chuck F,
Ish of the Hammer,
Chris L,
James L,
Zeke F,
James A,
Emilio P,
Shannon S,
Teresa C,
Azia V,
Brian O,
and Robert B.
Thank you guys.
Thanks, y'all.
We'll talk at you next time.
Right, we will.
Bye.
Bye-bye.